Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Ksuvos, daf Tzadi Tes. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learning Zechon Nishmas Liba Gavela Bashmuel. We go back to a Mishnah on Tzadi Ches Amad Aleph. Let's just say the Mishnah again outside. I'm going to review the Mishnah, the points of the Mishnah, and then we're going to go right into the Gemara. The Mishnah basically deals with three cases. A woman is a widow. She was married. Unfortunately, her husband died. And now she's collecting her ksuva. She's taking the properties that belong to her kids. It's not hers. It's theirs. It's their property. And she's going to sell off whatever she needs to sell off in order to recoup her ksuva. So the Mishnah over here deals with a number of scenarios in which she sells. And the Mishnah wants to tell us a number of various chidushim. So number one, the Mishnah describes a scenario in which she either undersold or oversold. Meaning, let's say the field was worth 200 and she sold it for 100. So she did a poor job selling. But okay, in other words, she got her ksuva, even though she only has $100 to show for it. I'm using the word dollars over here, just, you know, it's money. So she only got $100, but still, the chiddush is that the land itself was worth 200, so she should have sold it for 200. She didn't. Okay, that's her loss. Let's go the other direction. Let's say the land was worth 100 and she sold it for 200. She did a fantastic job selling the land. So good for her, but in other words, that's it. In other words, her ksuva has been satisfied. She now has 200. So that's the first chiddush in the Mishnah. But in both of those cases, that's it. That's the end of end of the discussion, huh?
She gets to keep the overage.
It's not an overage. Meaning, it's an overage over the value of the property, but it's not an overage over a ksuva. A ksuva was 200. Okay, that is case number one. Case number two in the Mishnah is, let's say her ksuva was $100, and she sells a land that was worth $101. So it's only $1 more than the ksuva's owed, but the Mishnah says that's no good, meaning that sale is a voided sale, because she has no right to sell a property that exceeds her ksuva. Her ksuva is 100. She could sell a property either that's less than or equal to her ksuva, but she has no right to sell that property. So the Mishnah says that sale is a voided sale. Now, the Mishnah did quote the opinion of Rosh Shimon Gamliel. Rosh Shimon Gamliel says, if it's a little overage, if it's a little over ksuva, that's not a big deal. Obviously, she'll reimburse the kids the difference between the two, obviously. But in other words, in order for this sale to be voided, it has to be that the field exceeds her ksuva by greater than a legal parcel of land. Legal parcel of land, depending on what kind of field it is, it's either going to be tisha kabin or a half a kab or a quarter of a kab. Okay, but then it gets very technical. But in other words, it's a little bit over her ksuva is not a big deal. A legal parcel worth of land over her ksuva, that's a big deal, and that nullifies the sale. And then finally, the Mishnah had a final case in which she was owed 400 zuz for her ksuva. Her ksuva was for 400. And she sold off various parcels of land. One for 100, a second for another 100, a third for another 100. And you get to the third parcel of land, and it was 101. So they exceeded the balance. So the Mishnah tells us that last sale of land is no good. Okay, so there's much to discuss within the context of our Mishnah. The Mishnah is illustrating a number of chidushim in terms of her selling land in order to recoup her ksuva, in order to have a satisfaction of her ksuva. So anyway, so we start with the Gemara on the very bottom, Tzadi Ches Amud Aleph.
Remember, Gamliel will argue in the last case too, no?
Presumably, yeah. Presumably. Maishna shava masayim b'mana d'amri la adav sata shava mana masayim nami teman ana avachna. So the Gemara starts off with a very simple observation from the first case in the Mishnah. So look, when she sells the land that's worth 200, she sells it for 100. Certainly understand the Yisomim's argument. And their argument is very simple and very valid. Look, that land was worth 200, right? It was appraised. We did the comps. It was worth 200, and you sold it for 100. So we're really sorry, but in other words, you're the one who caused the loss. I know you only walked away with 100, but you had you had land that was worth 200. So you caused that loss, and therefore that's it. We're done. The ksuva has been satisfied. Good. But let's go in the other case. In the other case, the land was worth 100, and she sold it for 200. So can she make the argument, and can she say, "Ana avachna"? Look, that's me. Meaning, I'm obviously good at this. Right? She's a good broker. In this case, she's a good seller. So I'm obviously good at this. And can she say, look, the land was only worth 100. We're going to call that 100. And about the additional 100, That's mine. I'll pocket that. That's mine. In other words, but I'm still entitled to another land that's worth 100. Why can't you make that argument? So I'm Rav Nachman, I'm Rav Baravua, Kanchan Rebbe. So here's what Rebbe taught us based on this Mishnah, and that is Akol HaBala Ma'os. And something that, right, anyone who's invested, so you know this, but the Gemara says this is a halachic rule. And that is that when you are providing capital, and you're the one putting up the money, regardless of how much work effort, and you know, the actual people who ran the business are, when all said and done, you're the money, so therefore you get the profit. It's that simple. So hakol labalamaos. So Rashi ashalech shlucha l'shuk l'schora. Let's say I send somebody a messenger into the market to do business, and I'm providing the capital. V'lakach bezol hakol labalamaos. And he did a great job. He bought cheap. He sold high. He did a great job. That's great. I'm the one collecting the profit. He can't tell you, hey, I made the profit. I mean, yes, you did, but the profit goes to me. I'm the owner of the money, and it all goes to the Bala Maus. Here also, the Yisomim are saying to the widow as follows. Look, that's our land. It's true you have a lien on the property, and you're selling the property as the shliach. But when all said and done, we're the one providing the capital. It's our land. And now you took a land that was worth 100 and sold it to 200. That's our money. And now with our money, what are we going to do with our money? Now we'll satisfy your ksuva. Your ksuva was worth 200. We'll give you 200.
But can't you argue the opposite, that she has the capital because she had the lien?
She has a lien, but that doesn't make her... I know this is always tricky. Meaning the lien holder is how much of an owner. So in this Gemara, we're saying that she is not the true owner. She has now a lien on the property, but that doesn't make her the true owner. The true owner is the kids. I know.
It's up to the value of the money that is owed, right? So if somebody has a $200 loan, and the property is worth $300, the lien is only for $200.
Yeah, so that property she can't sell.
Right.
She has no right to sell that property. But here in this case, she has a lien of $200. The property itself is worth $100, and she did a great job. She sold it for $200. So again, so Rebbe says, and the Rav Nachman Yitzchak quotes it, he says that's fine. Meaning, but she can't claim ownership of that profit. The profit goes to the kids. And now with that money, the kids say, okay, good. Here's the money for your ksuma. Okay, admittedly, it's a chiddush. Okay, the time the Gemara quotes another brisa just to make sure that we understand. An additional amount was added, right? Rashi says, first of all, contextually, what are we talking about? This is a Tosefta from Masechtas Damai, and... So an additional one was added, so it all goes to the shliach, and Rabbi Yossi says it gets divided. And then meanwhile we have another braisa where Rabbi Yossi says everything goes to the one providing the money, in other words, the one providing the capital. So we have a steer within Rabbi Yossi. On one hand, Rabbi Yossi says it gets divided. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says everything goes to the one with the money. So I'm Rabbi Chama. So the Gemara says, look, it's very simple. If it's something with a fixed price, in other words, Rashi gives examples over here, kagon kidneys, in other words, beans, canned beans. Okay, I know this is going to sound funny, but canned beans are going to come up twice in today's Gemara. So here's the first time. So let's say you have canned beans. Canned beans are sold, and it's a fixed price. In other words, there's very little fluctuation of price with canned beans. I know you can sometimes clip a coupon, but everyone knows how much it's worth. So the So bechanas b'mida male. I'm reading Rashi. It's sold in the store at volume, and we know exactly how much we're gonna pay. Kli bepruta imo sifa achas yisera cholken de matana hava yesh lomar l'shliach not navi yesh lomar labalabais nitna. And now the store owner says, you know what? You're such a nice guy. I'll add another can. Okay, and good, so he does so. So clearly that's a matana, that's a gift. Because we all know the price of how much it costs. So when the store owner adds another can or another couple beans, so that's definitely a gift. And now the only question on the table is, who is he gifting it to? Was he gifting it to the shliach, or was he gifting it to the one who was giving the money? Okay, so that's unclear, that's why that money gets divided. But if it's something where the price of the item is unclear, like says Rashi. Rashi gives an example of clothing. I mean, we could talk property as well, but Rashi gives an example of clothing. The price of clothing, it's unclear how much it's gonna pay. Right? Ask any guy how much they pay for their suit. The price range is gonna fluctuate. Now, I don't ask me in terms of telling you what the difference of quality is between one suit and another. They all seem to be the same to me. So but in other words, the price is wildly fluctuating. So there, if the capital gives money, the guy with the money gives it to a shlich, and the shlich does a great job, okay, but since the price is unclear, so therefore all gains, all profits are going to go to the mishalech, the one who sent them. Good. So that's the Gemara explaining this theory within Rav Yossi, and that brings us back to Rebbe's point. Rebbe's point is that whenever you're purchasing something where the price is not an absolute fixed price, and it could and the price could range, and it can move around, so therefore all gains that are achieved through good buying and good selling are going to go back to the Baal Hamos. Good. Back to the Gemara Amar of Papa Hilchasa, Davisheish lo kitzva chokin, Davisheish lo kitzva, kol la Baal Hamos. And then Rav Papa says, and this is a halacha. The Gemara says, Maika Mashmalan. So the Gemara says, what's Rav Papa coming to teach us? Didn't we just say that? No, the Gemara says, no, we didn't say that. Meaning what we did is we cited a steer within Rav Yossi, and we answered the steer in Rav Yossi using this to answer the steer. That doesn't mean that that's a halacha, meaning that just simply means that we have an approach to understanding the two statements of Rav Yossi. And so the Gemara says, Maika So the Gemara says what's coming to teach us is it's not just giving a svar in the base medrash, meaning that's correct. That's absolutely correct. That if it's a fixed price and then more was added, so then that's divided between the shlich and the mishalech. If it's not a fixed price and there was a gain, so that gain all goes to the Baal Hamos. Period. Ad kan. That takes us to the end of that discussion.
Why shouldn't the loss go to the Baal Hamos also when the woman loses
Well, in the first case, correct. But she's the shliach. But their argument, the Gemara started off with this point. Their argument is as follows: yes, you're our shliach, but you're our shliach to do good for us. In other words, the Gemara throws this far around very often, meaning a shliach is not expected, and more than that, not told to do something bad for me. I send somebody to do an agency for me. I only want him to do either what I asked or exceed what I asked. But if he does less than what I asked, that's not good. So, okay. And the rest of today is going to be dealing with the following scenario. We're going to ask this question in one of two ways. Let's start off obviously over here. The first way we're going to ask this Gemara's question, Ibai Lahu. Amalei Zavin Le Lischa. Va'azav Zavin Le Kura. Okay, I go to a shlech and I say as follows: look, do me a favor. I want to sell off properties, and I want you to sell me a lesech of my property. Okay, a kur and a lesech are different ways of sizing property. Okay, throughout the Gemara never discusses linear measurement of property. Gemara always discusses property in terms of how much seed could be placed on it. So lesech and kur are volumes. But for our purposes, all we need to know is the following. A kur is a big land, a big parcel of land. Okay, very technical language for today. And a lesech is half of that. That's all we need to know in order to appreciate and understand the Gemara. Okay. I say to the agent, okay, here we go. I got a lot of properties. I need money. I sell them off. Sell off a kur for me. And no, I'm sorry. Okay, I went to the second half of today's daf. Sell for me a lesach. Hell, sell for me a half a kor. And what this guy did is, without my authorization, he sold a full kor. Okay, so he did not do what I instructed him to do, but there wasn't a qualitative difference in what he deviated. The only thing that he deviated from my instruction was a quantitative difference. Okay. Now I didn't ask him to sell that second half, that second lesach. So clearly that sale is not a valid sale. And that's not even open for discussion. But what is open for discussion is as follows. At least the first lesach that he sold, can we say that he complied with instruction? In other words, I'll put it in very simple terms. I told him to sell one. He sold two. How do we view that two? Is that two viewed as one plus one? Mm-hmm. Or is that two viewed as two? Okay. Right. And the difference is all the difference in the world. Okay. Or the difference is all the difference in the world. Because if what he did is one plus one, so good. I told him to do one. Right, correct. I told him to do one. He did one. He also added another one. Okay, well, ignore that. And that obviously, and that sale obviously will be voided. Or no. I told him to sell one, and he sold two, and that's totally different than what I asked him. Even though the difference is only quantitative. But that's different. And being that that's different, that means that he didn't comply with what his instruction was, and that means that the entire shlichus is abrogated. That's the question on the table, and for a good part of today's daf, this is what we're going to be discussing. On one hand, it's just a hosafa. He's just added on to what he was told to do. So at least we could validate the first lesech that he sold. Or no, this is a total ignoring of instruction, and this is a violation of instruction, and therefore velischa nami lo kane. Not even the first lesech is subject to a sale. I'm Rav Yaakov Narpakod Mishmei de Ravina Tashma. Okay, so 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, 4 different attempts we're going to try to prove this question from various Mishnayos of Brisas. Okay, here we go, number one. Okay, number one comes from the world of Me'ila. Let's remind ourselves what we are, what we once heard, and maybe even twice, but let's remind ourselves again. In the world of Me'ila, that means that something belongs to Hekdesh and I use it for my own benefit, so I misappropriate it from the Beis HaMikdash. That's a fancy term for stealing. I stole from the Beis HaMikdash. The Torah says in Parshas Vayikra that when a person steals from the Beis HaMikdash, so, and he does so b'shogeg, and he does so unbeknownst to him, in other words, he forgot that it belonged to Hekdesh, so number one, he has to pay principal value of that which he took. He has to add on a fifth, and he has to also bring a carbon me'ila as well. We also know that there's a general rule throughout Shas of Ein Shlech L'Dvar Avera. I ask somebody to do an Avera, and he does it. So the general rule is that Ein Shlech L'Dvar Avera. That's his fault. That's his responsibility. That's not me. Even though I asked, told him to do it, it doesn't matter. That's his fault. Now, with every rule, you know there's an exception. And with this rule as well, there's also an exception. Meaning sometimes we're going to say, Yesh Shliach L'Dvar Avera. That sometimes when I instruct somebody to do an Avera, and he does what I ask him to do, I, the messenger, the one who sent him, the Mishaleach, am going to have to own that responsibility of that Avera. And what's that exception? Me'ila. Me'ila is one of those unusual exceptions. The truth of the matter is, the second parak of Kedushin, there are 3 exceptions all told, but right now we're focusing on Me'ila. So, with all that stated, with that small introduction, let's begin. Amar l'balabai l'shulchotein lahem chaticha l'orchin. So the balabai says to his shliach, he says to his butler as follows, dude, look, do me a favor. I want you to give a piece of meat to the guest. We just had a guest come in. Give him one piece of meat. V'hu omer telushtayim. Now, the shliach says to the guests, I want you to take 2 pieces of meat. And then the guest himself says, wow, that was unbelievable. What a great piece of steak. You know what? We'll take another. And they took 3 pieces of meat. Okay, so 1, 2, 3. One was how much the owner of the house instructed the shliach. Shliach told them to take 2, and they helped themselves to 3. So why do we have such a strange scenario? Because we want a case where kulan ma'alu. All three people involved violated the Isser of Me'ila. The meat here in question belonged to Hekdesh, and therefore each one of them misappropriated, right? Obviously the Baal Bais didn't eat, neither did the Shliach, but they're the ones who either instructed or actually, right, instructed the Baal Bais to eat. And so we have a scenario where all three violated Me'ila. Okay, now, let's first, huh?
No one of the three knew it was
right, correct. It's B'shogeg. It was done B'shogeg. Okay, first things first, let's start with the Baal Bais. What did he do wrong? So again, in general, in the general rules of Halacha, he instructed someone else to do an Avera, and generally we say, Ein Shlech L'Dvar Avera, but again, we're talking about Me'ila. This is the exception to the rule. So he did wrong because he instructed someone, in other words, right, meat that he quote-unquote owned, although he didn't because it belonged to Hekdesh, but he instructed somebody else to take it. Okay, so that's why he's violating Me'ila on the first piece of meat. The second piece of meat, because the shliach added another piece. In other words, he was only authorized to give 1 piece. Had he only given 1 piece, he would have gotten off Me'ila. because the Isser Me'ila would have gone back to the Meshaleach. But he, on his own, authorized the second piece, so therefore he violated Me'ila. And now the people sitting at the table, they helped themselves to a third piece of meat. Well, they were only instructed to take two, and they took a third, so they, on that third piece, violated Me'ila. Good, simple, very straightforward example. But here now, the Gemara uses this as a launching pad to discuss our very question. In other words, what did the butler do? He added onto instruction. So he added onto instruction. Do we view that as a total abrogation of his shlichus? Or no, is it just an augmentation? Meaning he's doing what he's told to do, and he's adding another one. It's pretty clear from this brisa that what he's doing is he's adding. Because think about it, says the Gemara. The Mishalech violated Me'ila. Well, if the shliach violated his instruction, so then nothing should go back to the mishaleach. Ela'i amart ma'avi'al dvarav haveh. If the shliach totally violated instruction, balabai samay ma'al. So the balabai should violate me'ila? No, he shouldn't. The Mishnah says, v'atanan, shliach sh'asa shlichus balabai ma'al. Lo asa shlichus shlich ma'al. Yes, in the world of me'ila, we do say, yesh shliach l'dvaravera. But you have to be a shliach, meaning you have to be compliant with that which you were instructed. If you follow your instruction, so then you're good shliach, which means that in the world of Me'ila, the Isser goes back to the one who sent you. But if you did not follow instruction, so then you're no longer working as a shliach, you're an independent operator, you're the one who's going to violate the Isser of Me'ila. So when the shliach told the guest to take two, so if they're violating instruction, so then he's operating as an independent misappropriator, and so therefore the Isser shouldn't go back to the Mishaleach. So the Gemara says, Hachem b'may skin, the Gemara says, now look, if we stop right now, that's a great proof. That when you the Shliach add on to your instruction, but it's only a quantitative difference and you're just augmenting, it's really 1 plus 1. And it seems to be a great proof, but the Gemara deflects. And the Gemara says, Hachem b'may skin, no. Really what we could suggest over here is the following. Da'amaluhu t'lu achaz midato shal balabais v'achaz midati v'shakli inu t'las. It could be that case of Me'ila is discussing a very, very specific scenario where the shliach says to the guest as follows. Look, take one because my master told you to take one. And take one because I'm telling you to take one. So in other words, he clearly articulates one because I was told to do so and one because I want to come off as a good guy. Okay, so then you're right. In other words, if that's the case, then it seems to be obvious. And the way we're learning the braisa before this answer, it's a better and bigger chiddush. Okay, Tashma. Here we go. Now, you understand why we're onto this topic of discussion, because our Mishnah is going to be serving as one of the Mishnayos that's going to weigh in on this discussion. Our Mishnah describes a scenario in which a woman was only owed a ksuv of 100. She sells a property. Now remember, her role in the sale of this property is she's a shliach. It's not her property, it's the Yisomim's property. She's a shliach to sell off this property. I agree. But in other words, her act of sale is doing so as a shliach. And now, the property was worth 101, and she sold it for 100, no good. Now, I just explained the Mishnah that it was 101, she sold it for 100. The Gemara now is going to offer a different explanation of the Mishnah. My lav dezavin shaveh manavidina b'manavidina. So the Gemara says, here could be the pshat in the Mishnah. Now again, we're going to go into a little bit of speculation, but fine. The case of the Mishnah is as follows. Again, the ksuva, her ksuva is 100. The land was worth 101. She sold it for 101. Now, that's a difficult pshat in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah says bimana. So the Gemara immediately addresses that. Umay bimana. Now, it's true the Mishnah says bimana, but it just simply means mana shalah. It means for her mana, meaning she's owed a mana. Umay afilu. And the Gemara says, and then the Mishnah says, this is no good. And even, and what does the Mishnah mean by the word even? It means like this. Afilu yamaras aksir sedina liyorshim bedina mikarka'ai. Look, she says to the Yerushim as follows. Here's what I'm ready to do. I have a ksuva and it's worth 100. The land is worth 101. And I'm selling it for 101. And boys, I'll do the following. I'll cut off one dinar's worth of my property and I'll give it to you. essentially, I'll turn this into not one, but two different transactions. One in which will be 100 dinar, which will satisfy my ksuva, and whatever the difference is, I'll cut that off my property, or mark off my property, and I'll give you that extra dinar's worth of property. Good. And the Mishnah is telling us that even though she does all that, uketani machra batel, the sale is not a good sale. So again, now, the way we're setting up the Mishnah, she as a shliach is doing what? She is complying with instruction. Her instruction is to only sell a property worth 100. She's adding to that. She's selling a land that's worth 101, but she's going to give back the kids that one dinar.
Dinner or what, a piece of land of dinner?
A piece of land that's worth a dinar.
But what's a piece of land of dinner?
I know. I understand. I understand. That's a very good point. It's a valid point. But okay. It's right. Not worth a whole lot. But that's what the Gemara is suggesting. And if that's what the Gemara suggests, if that's what the Mishnah is teaching us, and the conclusion of the Mishnah is Machra Batel, so that would answer our question. Our question is, when the Shliach does above and beyond what he's told to do. So can't we at least say that the original sale should be good? And it sounds like from now, no. When you add on to your shlichus, it is a violation of instruction, and it's no good. So I'm Rav Huna Bered, Rav Nasan Lo Bedozil. So the Gemara says, no, that's not the pshat in the Mishnah. You know what the pshat in the Mishnah is? It's what the simple pshat is, which is that she undersold. In other words, the land was worth 101 and she sold it for 100. That's the pshat in the Mishnah. And that's why the sale is not a good sale. So the Gemara says, you know, in of itself, that wouldn't be a bad pshat in the Mishnah, but I'll tell you what. Remember when we reviewed the Mishnah, there was another case at the end of the Mishnah, which was almost identical. Look at the end of the Mishnah. The end of the Mishnah is Isaac. The Gemara here quotes the entire Mishnah, the entire last half of the Mishnah. Isaac. So she sold all four pieces of property. She was owed 400. The first three properties were worth 100 each. Good. Sell. And then she sold the last piece of property, but that last piece of property she sold was worth 101. And she sold it for 100. So shall achron machr bata v'shal kulan machron kayim. So the first three sales of the property, she did a great job. For that last property, machr bata, the sale's not a good sale. She undersold the land that was worth 101, and because it was worth 101, by the way, she had no right to sell it, and she undersold it, she sold it for 100, therefore, that last land that she sold is no good. So already in that case, the Mishnah is teaching us the case of underselling a land, where that sale is not going to be a good sale. So that chiddush now is covered. Now the Mishnah giving us another scenario, you'd only wonder, or at least speculate, that the Mishnah is giving us a different chiddush. The Mishnah is not going to just keep repeating chiddushim. So the Gemara says, "Lo, reisha v'seifa v'da'oza." The Gemara continues to argue, no. Really, in both cases, we're talking about where she undersells the property, and I'll explain to you why the Mishnah has to give us both of these cases. V'seifa kamashmalan taima da'oza b'diyasme. So the Gemara says, look, underselling a property, maybe what the Mishnah wants to tell us in that very last case is, you know why the sale, that fourth land that she sold is no good? Because now she's encroaching on their property. In other words, she is now underselling what belongs to them. If she wants to undersell her property, Good for her. I mean, not good for her, but okay. If she wants to undersell her property, she may do so. And as far as accounting is concerned, the credit goes to how much it's valued, how much it was worth, not how much she sold it for. But once she sells that fourth property, where on her balance sheet she should be getting 100, and she sold the property that was 101, and she undersold that, that's no good. So the Gemara says, really, that's the chiddush of the Mishnah? We knew that already. Go back to the very first case of the Mishnah. She took a property that was worth 200. She sold it for 100. So she undersold, to say the least. Half of its value. What do we say? That, okay, good. You now have been satisfied your ksuva. Because you took a property that was worth 200. The fact that you undersold that the sale is a valid sale. The fact that it was worth 200, that satisfies your ksuva. Because that's not encroaching on the kids, that's her loss. If she wants to suffer a loss because of her sale and of her business dealing, so okay, that's going to be her loss. So we already see that point, that her underselling a property, as long as it doesn't create a loss for the Yesomim, is fine. So the Gemara says, no. Ma'u detem ha'asam hu distalk alei ma'ai beita, legamre. Gemara now draws a very subtle difference between the very first case of the Mishnah and the last case of the Mishnah. You see, in the very first case of the Mishnah, the land in question was worth 200. The sale of this land, whatever she gets for the sale of this land, is going to sever the relationship between her and the estate. In other words, she did a sale. It happens to have been a bad sale. But you know what? The land was worth 200. Whatever she got for that land, she's now out of the picture. Fine. In the last case of the Mishnah, think about it. She sold one land, a second land, a third land. In other words, there are multiple sales involved. Once she shows poor business judgment on one of the sales of the land, so maybe you could make the following argument. Look, it happens to have been we got lucky. She did it with the fourth parcel. But what if she did it with the first, or the second, or the third? And she's not out of the picture yet. And now she's got more sales that she needs to make. So the Gemara says that's the Chiddush. Avahach, nigzar mana rishonatu mana acharon. Maybe over here, we got lucky this time. She sold the last piece of land and she undersold it. But it could have been the first, it could have been the second, it could have been the third. So maybe here the Chachamim would have been more apt to say, you know what? No good. Meaning, you're clearly not qualified to sell this property. So Kamash Malan, that's the Chiddush. The Chiddush is that as long as the kids are not suffering any loss, and the only one who's suffering a loss is on account of her poor sale, her poor business skills, is going to be her. So, okay. All right.
Why are they suffering a loss if they're getting more for the last time?
No, you're thinking about the case where it was worth 100 and she sold for 200. Gemara is focusing right now on the case where the land was worth 200 and she sold it for 100. That's a loss for her.
What if the land was worth 300 and she sells it for 100? So she already gives up her kizuba because of that, but what about the...
No, but no, she can't. She had no right to sell that land to begin with. In other words, she can't sell a land that exceeds her kizuba.
It's void.
Yeah, correct. Okay, Igad Amri. All right, now, okay, so on the that was the first half of the daf today, and that covers the question, although the Gemara didn't resolve it. I'm sure you noticed, Hedy, I'm sure you noticed. The Gemara didn't resolve it, but when the Shlech was given instruction to sell a Lesech, and he sells twice that much, he sells a Kor. So the question on the table was, is that 1 + 1 what he did, or is that considered 2? Now, if it's 1 + 1, it means that the first lesach that he sold is a valid sale, and the second lesach obviously is voided because he wasn't instructed to do that. Or no. It's not 1 + 1, but rather it's 2. And the difference between that now is that it's a total violation of that which he was instructed to do, and therefore the sale should be a voided sale completely.
That's the... Avoid the entire sale?
Yeah.
Can the
buyer.
The buyer, can he avoid the sale? No, the question is not whether the buyer can. The question is whether or not the buyer is happy with what happened. He likes it. Now the question is now, can the Mishalech and the one who sends come along and say, he didn't comply with my instruction and we're voiding the whole sale, or no? He can only avoid the second and not the first.
It depends on what's the benefit to the Mashiach.
We'll talk. Yeah, right. Right.
Good. The outcome, bottom line, is good for him.
Good. That's very good. In other words, right, if we can look back and say that there was some sort of benefit for them. The general assumption throughout the Gemara, and certainly we got this point pretty clearly here in Ksuvos, is that selling land is never good. Meaning people sell land only when they're strapped for cash. And so generally speaking, it's a disadvantage to sell off property. That's the general approach throughout the Gemara. Okay.
If I send somebody to give meal, you know, some meat, let's say, the shliach is the one who sells is moil, but the shliach is not moil.
Right, correct. In other words, when we say yeshlech
ledva,
no. In other words, if he does what he's told to do, the iser goes back to the mishalech.
Yeah. The agent is not at all.
So again, the case of Me'ilah, we had two ways to learn the case. It could either be that it's 1 + 1, and so the
choice.
Okay, your question's valid. The Gemara gave two approaches. It's a completed sale, but if he's not following instructions, so then it's voided. Doesn't matter. In other words, if he didn't follow instruction, we're just going to go back and we're just going to void it all. Okay, and that now brings us to step two of the Gemara, and all we're going to do now is go through the same discussion, but now in the reverse. Okay, now, so let's see it inside. Ikadamri. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, I lost my spot. Okay. Okay, fine. Okay, the Ikadamri. I got it. I'm back. Haloti baylach. Hey, chadamer le zil zaben le lischa v'zaben le kura devade mosif al dvarav havai. Okay, so the Gemara says, and now in the second version, let's start off with a starting point that, as far as the first question is concerned, for sure it's a valid sale. Not the second lesech, but the first lesech, is it going to be a valid sale? And the fact that the shliach added another lesech, so that's 1 + 1. So in other words, the first lesech that he sold, compliant with instruction, good. The second lesech that he sold, obviously wasn't authorized to do so, that's going to be voided. But it's not 2, it's really 1 + 1. It's Hosafa. And so therefore the Gemara says that's going to be the starting point of this second version of the discussion. Kiti Bailach to Amrle Zil Zabin Le Kurva Azov Zabin Le Lischa. But now let's go in the other direction. Let's say instruction was to the Shliach, look, I need money and I want you to sell for me a kur. Okay, kur is 30 saw, it's a large field. And out comes back to Shliach and he says to the Mishaleach, look, tough day in the market today. I couldn't find a buyer for Kor, but I sold half your property. I sold a lasech. Okay? You're welcome. And the Mishaleach says to the Shliach, you're out of your mind. In other words, I didn't want you. That wasn't my instruction. I instructed you to sell a Kor. And now you sold the lesech, so my. So let's see, the Gemara now presents the two sides of this argument. So on one hand, the shliach could say to the mishaleach, I did good for you today. Because let's think about it. In other words, again, let's go back to the general assumption throughout Shas, and that is, no one wants to really sell the land. People are selling the land because they need the money. So the shliach could say to the mishaleach, look, on one hand, you asked me to sell a kor, which is a tremendous amount of property. I sold only a lesech. And look, if you need all the money, so we'll sell the second half as well. And if you don't need all the money, so then you're welcome. Because now, you have whatever money you need now, assuming that you don't need any more than that, and you still have half of your property. So on one hand, the shliach can make the argument to the mishaleach, I did you a favor. We're good. On the other hand now, think about the paperwork. Because now, it's funny, I say paperwork, it's more than just paperwork. But now think about it, because now, even if the shliach is right, and even if now the land is going to be sold in 2 different parcels, but selling the land now in 2 different parcels means that you're going to be creating now 2 documents, 2 title, 2 different people, each one of them having not a lien against you, but certainly the guarantee or recourse. Now that means that if the land is taken away from them, 2 different people are going to be coming after you for recourse, meaning it's going to create more headache, more people involved, more 2 deeds instead of 1 deed, 2 headaches instead of 1 headache. Mishaleach could say, no, you didn't do good for me. So I'm Rabbi Chanina Misura Tashma. So once again now, here we go. Mishnayos and Braises to resolve this question of whether or not instruction was to sell a kor, shliach sold half of that, yes or no. And it's not a qualitative difference, it's a quantitative difference.
All these cases, is there a written instruction or not?
Is there what?
A written instruction with witnesses like shliach, or is
that... No, there's no disputing, I understand that, but no one's disputing what the instruction was and what he did. There's no contention over here. The issue is, he just didn't do what he was told to do. And the issue is, the only change he made was a quantitative change, not a qualitative change. And there's an assumption throughout this entire discussion of the Gemara. Had it been a qualitative change, then obviously, then for sure that's a violation of instruction.
Okay.
he's non-compliant. But over here, it's just a quantitative difference. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, let's do it this way. Now, it's in Lodina Shalzav. Let's say I give my shliach a gold coin. A gold coin is equal to 25 silver dinarim. But what we need to know in order to appreciate this brisa is that a gold coin is worth 6 salayim. That's our magic number for now. And he says, look, go get me a suit. Okay, and it's got and I'm giving you a gold coin, and I want a suit worth this gold coin, this 6 salayim. And now what happens is that the shliach goes and he gets a suit, and the suit only costs 3 salayim, and now he's got 3 salayim left over. So what does he do with those extra 3 salayim? Gets him a shirt. Okay, now I know I'm not translating literally, but you understand. Okay, good. So he got a suit, and now he got a shirt, and now it turns out this money, unbeknownst to the two of them, the money belonged to Hekdesh. And so now we're back in the world of Me'ila. And again, had the shliach done exactly what he asked him to do, so the rule is over here, yesh shliach ledvar avera. This is Me'ila. So then the Isser of Me'ila translates back to the Mishaleach. But over here, the shliach didn't do exactly what he was told to do. Only 3 of those salayim, half the money that was given to him, he spent on a suit. Right. And the other 3 he spent on a shirt. And the Braisa says, they both violated Me'ila. Now, by saying they both violated Me'ila, that's telling us that the shliach did exactly what he was instructed to do. Now, we know it's not exact. But still, we have to somehow work it out that he was compliant with instruction. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the Isra Me'ila wouldn't go back to the Mishaleach. So the Gemara says, so over here, we're going to have to make the argument that the Baal HaBayis violated Me'ila because the Shliach did what he was told to do. And we're going to have to somehow, we're going to work that out. How is that true? But if it's a total violation of instruction, instruction was to take the 6 and buy a suit with 6. And that's not what the shliach did. The shliach purchased a suit worth 3. If that's a violation of instruction, so then the Isser of Me'ila doesn't go back to the Mishaleach because he's no longer operating as a shliach. So on my mal, halcha b'may skin and da'isel eishav v'sheish b'shalosh. So the Gemara says like this. Gemara says, I'll tell you how all this works. It works in the following scenario, where he went down and he bought wholesale. In other words, the suit was actually worth 6. And because, again, of just good business sense, and he went bargain hunting, so he got a suit that's actually worth 6, but he only needs to spend 3, which then gave him another 3. So he figured, you know, I'll do my friend a favor. I'll get him a shirt. So, e'achi shliach amai ma'al. So the Gemara then asked the question, which at first it's really difficult to even understand what the question is. So why should the shliach be in violation of Me'ila? Meaning, he did exactly what he was instructed. The instruction was, buy a suit worth 6, and he did. Happens to be that. He only needed 3 coins to buy that suit worth 6. But he did follow instruction in terms of the result. So why did the shliach violate Me'ila? So the Gemara says, Atalis. It's so funny. I like the question, the answer, like, the answer is so obvious. It's kind of, you got to wonder what the question was. So the Gemara says, no, I'll tell you why the shliach is also going to be subject to the Isra Me'ila, because he took the other 3 and he bought a talis and he was not authorized to do that. So he hachim a seifa. So the Gemara says, well, let's consider now the second part of this Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Afazu Baal HaBayis Lo Ma'al Memeshiach Olomer Chalak Gadol Ha'isi Mevakesh V'ata V'esili Chalak Katan V'ra. So Rabbi Yehuda says, no, in this regard I disagree. Because the Baal HaBayis could say back to the Shliach, look, right, what I wanted you to do was take all 6 and buy it on a suit. And you didn't do that. And you could have gotten me just to quote the language of Rabbi Yehuda, a Chalak Gadol. You could have gotten me a large chaluk. And what you did is, you got me a smaller one. And this is what you got me. You got me something which was small. Now, in the dialogue, what you hear from Rabbi Yehuda is that it certainly sounds like there's a qualitative difference between what was instructed versus what he brought back. But the Gemara... Yeah.
Suspended.
Right. So my ra, rabidamin. So the Gemara says, here's what we're going to have to say. That even though the word ra was used, and ra usually means bad, and ra usually means it's qualitatively inferior, but over here, ra just simply means ra bedamim, meaning you did bad in terms of my money.
It was the same quality shirt, but it was cheaper.
The Amar Lay. All right, the Amar Lay. I Isis li kol shekein da have shis tarte stray. Because look, if you would have done what I told you to do, and that is take my six and spend it on a suit. What you would have come out with is a suit that was worth 12. Right. That's what I wanted you to do, and you didn't do that, and for that it's a total lack of compliance with my instruction, and you're no longer operating as a shliach. So the Gemara says, "Dekanami diktani," and the Gemara says, "And look, this pshat that we just offered, it's a correct pshat. Why? Because moder Rav Yehuda, because we have the following brisa. Moder Rav Yehuda bekinish shnei malu. In the case where canned beans, here we go, round two of canned beans. In the case of canned beans, shakinis bestela vekinis bepruta. When it comes to canned beans, it doesn't matter whether you buy in bulk or whether you buy one can at a time. Obviously, the Gemara didn't know about Costco. It doesn't matter. It's always going to be the same price. So Rabbi Yehuda will say that in that case, I concede, because there it doesn't make a difference whether you're buying one can, five cans, 10 cans of beans. It's all going to be the same. So if for some reason, in other words, of the six, he only needed three to buy that much cans, and then the other three he uses, so then Rav Yehuda will concede. But when we're talking about a garment where the price is not perfectly clear how much it is, and he took a suit that was worth six and he only needed three to buy it, so Rav Yehuda will tell you, in that case, then I wanted you to use all six for the suit, you would have got me a suit that's worth 12. So Shema Mina, So the Gemara says, look, if we're talking about a place where they sold it by estimation, so the Gemara says, if that's true, so then the more you buy, the cheaper it is. So Amara Papa Basra de Kaile Bekane. Now, I know I'm not giving a literal translation of the Gemara over here, but basically they buy by cans. Kane does not mean cans, but in other words, it's a unit amount, and it's not approximation. The Amrle kind of bepruta. So there, Rav Yehuda is going to agree that in such a scenario, you know exactly how much you're buying for, you know how much money you're going to need to spend, and so there, Rav Yehuda will agree that if for whatever reason he's able to buy the amount that was asked for half the dollar, and then he uses a half for others, so then in that case, Rav Yehuda will agree that both are mole. But in the case of clothing where the price can go up and go down, you can buy wholesale, you can get a bargain, so there the Mishalech can say to the Shliach, once you're spending my money, and once my dollar has more buying power, I wanted you to spend all six of it on a suit, and you could have got me a suit you could have got me a suit that valued at 12 instead of six. Okay? So on the question, I'm sorry, let me just quickly recap. So there are two basic questions that we asked today after having learned the Mishnah all the way back on Sadi Ches Amad Aleph. Question number one, the instruction was to buy one and you brought two. So is that first one that you bought, is that a compliance with instruction or a violation of instruction? The Gemara asks the question, the Gemara doesn't resolve in the first version. In the second version of the discussion, the Gemara says, for sure, the first that he sold was good, the second is no good, and then we're going to ask the question the other direction. Let's say he sold, let's say the instruction was to sell two, and he only sold one, so is that going to be a violation of instruction? We're in the middle of answering that question. Right now, the Gemara leaves it up in the air, quoted a Mishnah in Me'ilah to describe it. The Mishnah in Me'ilah may not speak to this particular case.